I grew up with a lot of abuse and neglect, and so went through a lot of trauma myself. And so as a client, my purpose in life is to help people. Folks to also understand that what I call the magical question with anxiety is that, will I be okay?
Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. So glad you're listening to Health Power. I was really excited when I got the book by John Trentalon's PhD. His fantastic book is Making Movies in Our Minds, Working Through Our Anxiety. Prefer Dr. John, Dr. Trentalon. What do you prefer?
Just call me John.
All right, John. Well, welcome to Health Power. It's great to have you on.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
Well, I want to mention that you are, like I said, you're a PhD. You're a clinician who specializes in assisting individuals heal from emotional trauma, anxiety, depression, and attachment issues. And you draw on your more than 25 years experience to offer techniques that he and his clients have used to diminish anxiety. Well, that sounds good to me. John, when did you know that you wanted to be a psychologist?
Through my own therapy, just to share a little bit myself, I grew up with a lot of abuse and neglect, and so went through a lot of trauma myself. And so as a client, I was like, purpose in life is to help people.
Wow. And what things helped you work through your trauma?
Well, the realization that there is such a thing as repressed memories, despite that there was a lot of debate over that.
Yes.
And also to just being able to know I'm not crazy. It's like,
yes.
Okay. And being able to say, oh, there is a purpose. There is a reason why my body is reacting the way it is. And all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really glad you mentioned that. We do store a lot of trauma in our body. I really enjoyed the book because not only do you help us with exercises, but you go through so many different things. You talk about how anxiety differs from fear. You talk about the different types of anxiety disorders. You talk about the 3 points concepts of the anxiety tripod. Actually, why don't you start with that? And then I'd love to jump into some of these other things. Tell us about the anxiety tripod.
Anxiety tripod, because I have a pretty simple mind, Lisa, is that I just wanted to say, you know, this is a tripod. Is one, and it's not in any particular order. To whoever is listening to this, there's no priority here. It's just simply, you know, one leg is feeling helpless. Another leg is feeling a lack of control. And the editor to my book was saying, well, they're the same. It's like, no. And my clients who struggle with anxiety understand that they're different. And how they're different really quick is you can feel a lack of control but not feel helpless. And so you're feeling both a feeling of helplessness and feeling a lack of control in whatever the situation is. And you're feeling alone, that nobody understands you.
A lot of that, what you write about in the book, is it stems from childhood abuse. You write, quote, children need to make sense out of their worlds. They do this by finding very simple ways to complete their stories by making the story about them. And the problem is if they're being abused and they think, well, it must be me. There's something that I'm doing. Talk to us about that connection that you see between trauma and anxiety.
Is that when you don't feel okay, and I'm going to add in something called attachment, Lisa. Some therapists and psychologists talk about attachment as strictly in the relations form. To me, it's the executive functioner for our schoolwork, our academics, our workplace, our social life, everything. And so when there's abuse there, especially from a trusted individual or supposedly someone who's supposed to trust, that gets broken up and we become to feel we're not okay. There's something wrong with us.
Yes. Now, I believe that some people are born with anxiety. I kind of see it both on my husband's side and my side. So I don't necessarily think everyone's anxiety is caused by trauma, but it's exacerbated. Or do you think that you have to have trauma to have anxiety?
No, thank you for asking that question, Lisa, very much, because there's several reasons. Abuse is only one. Emotional neglect is another. You can have, quote unquote, a wonderful, loving family, but if one individual or both parents are performers, meaning they are highly successful, And the attachment between the child and the parent is, I really look up to dad or mom. That child could grow into an adult who has a lot of what I call performance anxiety, meaning I need to perform this. or sometimes parents are not aware that they're being critical of something. If a child is more sensitive than another child, they can pick up on such a thing like, how come you got to be? The parent may have just been asking, how come you got to be? A very matter of fact. But if the child is born with a sensitivity, the child may interpret that as, that's about me. Because children have no choice but to interpret everything. So no, there's a wide range of work anxiety can come from. The way that I work as a clinician, Lisa, is that I give a very quick and dirty assessment, what I call. And basically, I teach that anxiety and depression are on a continuum or a scale. Most individuals that I work with have low anxiety, meaning they're just bouncing around, kind of like a little bit of me this morning. You know, or you can have moderate anxiety. Or you can have severe anxiety where the individual is really, really having a hard time.
Yes. Now, I'm wondering, does severe anxiety come with ruminating thoughts? But can that happen with severe anxiety? Or what is the crossover, I guess?
OCD is connected to anxiety. I don't personally believe that you have to have OCD. Mm-hmm. But also what I want folks that are listening to this to understand is that is what the OCD stands for, obsessive compulsive disorder. So you could have obsessive ruminating thoughts, or you could have compulsive behavior. Using myself an example, I check locks 3 times.
Okay.
I was working with a client the other day that has to take photos of the house to make sure it's okay, you know, before he leaves. And so basically, being able to understand that there is a difference. You don't have to have all of it, but you can. And so if you think about it, why is a person having ruminating thoughts? They're anxious. And I want folks to also understand that what I call the magical question with anxiety is that, will I be okay?
Right.
Will I be okay? And so I got to have this obsessive thought because I don't know if I'm going to be okay. And so it keeps on coming around and around.
I have tried so many skin and hair care products. I can't even tell you. It's insane. I mean, at one point, the closet in my bathroom was full with every imaginable product. And then I found what works. And that is OneEarthBodyCare.com. I am in love with their shampoo and conditioner bars. Completely changed the game for my daughter, who had a hard time finding a good shampoo and conditioner for her hair. Their face and body is amazing. I love their day and night oil, all natural ingredients, of course, and all of this essential oils, really great stuff. And of course, the deodorant has changed my life because I am no longer smelly. So go check them out now at OneEarthBodyCare.com.
Got generalized anxiety disorder, we got panic disorder, we've got social anxiety disorder, agoraphobia. What are some others?
Social anxiety, which is very common.
Right.
You know, there is, you know, so generalized anxiety disorder means that you're pretty much, the title of my book, Making Movies in Our Minds, has to do with going from one thing to another to another. There's individuals who are okay at work and at home and at shopping. Agoraphobia, being able, I can't leave my house. But there's individuals who are okay to leave the house, but when they go to a social setting, they panic, they get paralyzed, they can't speak, they have social anxiety.
Yeah, and that can be really challenging. One of the things that really jumped out of me, out of your book, is we become our diagnoses. I see a lot of that with, I have ADHD, or I have autism, or I have, and it doesn't, it's fine. I think labels are fine. They've helped her get services. They help other kids. But I'm concerned when they get so stuck in it, and then when there's resources or things to help, it becomes like their identity.
And I have the opposite opinion than you do, Lisa. Oh. I believe that labels are for the clinician. I don't even like to give labels. And most of the time, I don't give labels to clients. I explain to them what's going on, so that they know they're not crazy,
right?
And also, and that this is normal for them, and that there's a way things. But I think that labels can keep us stuck.
Yeah, I agree. I think I just like the labels for certain therapies to be covered or partially covered. John, in the book, you also talk about depression, anxiety, and stress. Talk to us about the difference between anxiety and depression.
Anxiety can unfortunately lead into depression, but depression, and as you know, Lisa, psychiatrists, because they come from a medical viewpoint, are saying that there's a chemical imbalance in the brain. But really what's going on is that depression is a thinking disorder. Anxiety is a thinking disorder. And I want the listener to understand that doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you. It just means that we need to change the way that you're thinking. So a depressed individual can have a lot of repressed anger turned towards self.
Right.
Or it can have, I'm just filled with self-hatred. Or I have a lot of negative thoughts about myself. And so it's pushing down and having a depression. Anxiety, not necessarily that you have negative thoughts. It's just that you don't have confidence that you're going to be okay.
Right. Yeah. And they often go hand in hand, it seems.
A lot of times it does, because if you become very anxious that you're not going to be okay, then you begin to feel like you're alone in the world. And feeling alone in the world and that there's something wrong with you leads into negative thinking, which I call a downward spiral that leads into depression.
Exactly. And this really adds to it as well. You talk about the way an anxiety-ridden person feels and acts. They might act irritable. They might act agitated. They might act nervous. And you were saying in the book that, quote, others can interpret our responses as rude, critical, or even mean. So how do we deal with that? Like, I'll know when Lila is having is a very anxious moment and she'll snap at me. And I'm not like, you're so mean, because I know what's going on.
The number one thing, no matter who the person is, never personalize somebody else's words or actions, even if it's toward you, it's about you.
Right.
It's about something going on with that individual. Step one. Step two is to be able to have that individual understand that, oh, this person is probably feeling a little bit scared or anxious, and I could explain the difference between those two if you would like. But right now, to answer your question, is we get them calm. Unfortunately, people think, calm down. It does not help. It does not help. It actually worsens it. It's more about what I call the magic question. What do you need? How can I help? Can I get a glass of water? Water actually grounds us. And keeps us calm. Also, the deep breathing. I have a technique that I call deep breathing and water. Take a sip of water. Take 5 deep breaths. Sip of water and 5 deep breaths.
Yes, I saw that. I'm going to have her try that.
For 4 minutes at a time and being able to like, oh, I'm calm. But also to be able to play out what you're anxious about. So the difference between anxiety and fear. Fear is present-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
Anxiety is always future-oriented. So it's like, well, what are you talking about? I'm having an anxiety attack now, or this person's having anxiety now. Yes, but it's about something in the future. You're either thinking that, so sometimes when clients say, I don't know what I'm anxious about, I ask them, check what your schedule is.
Mm-hmm.
But also fear is a stimulus, such as in driving, you know, in the snow or ice or in pouring rain. But when the car is parked, fear goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Anxiety is like a stove. It's always there. But it doesn't mean that you're always having an anxiety attack. It just means it's there. And hopefully we could find ways to calm it, shut it off, or shut it down.
Right. And you have some great exercises in the book. And before we get to those, and you mentioned one with the deep breathing and the sip of water, you have a whole chapter on mindfulness. You write, quote, mindfulness enters into our personal growth as a guide to inform us what we're feeling emotionally and in our bodies and to recognize our thoughts. Talk to us about how being mindful helps with anxiety.
When you're anxious, like I gotta say, it's very difficult to think clearly anyway. Being mindful is like, what is going on with my body, first of all? Maybe I need to excuse myself to the restroom. Maybe I need to go for a 10-minute walk and just breathe and getting the body relaxed. The body, the brain, mind, breath are all interconnected. So when we could get our body relaxed, our mind relaxed.
Now, when I was looking at the exercises, you mentioned again, we did the water. Talk to us about writing down your list of triggers.
Our triggers are almost always rooted into our childhood. I've been myself thinking, is there a trigger that comes from our adulthood? Possibly, but most of them are at least rooted in childhood. Again, children have to make sense to their world. But unfortunately, they only have black and white thinking and they only have their logic at that time. But that gets locked into the brain. So somebody says something or did something by our parent, a significant caregiver for us, that gets locked into the brain. So when in adulthood, when somebody does something similar or says something similar, our trigger is like a light switch and it goes onto that. So a lot of times couples argue with each other and they're not arguing with each other. They're arguing with their past. That makes sense, Lisa?
Yes, it does.
And so it's like, oh no, I got triggered. And the good thing to do in that type of situation is to tell your lover, your spouse, I'm triggered. I need a minute to readjust and think about what you said.
That's really important.
With young children, there's a very simple technique, and that is just if you can get your child to sit still for just a couple of minutes and listening to the heartbeat. Even Beethoven created a musical, made a composition on the heartbeat, okay? And so being able to have, because the attachment begins in the womb, is being able to go to listening to mom's heartbeat, dad's heartbeat, especially in the evening, because separation of darkness and light is huge. Separation from parent to being in your own bed is huge. Right. Also, doing this same activity in the morning, and then I have the parent, or suggested a parent to use this phrase, where is mom and dad? Well, at home or at work. No, mom and dad are in your heart. So a lot of times being able to really understand mom and dad is with me, yes. And then there's a third thing, Lisa, and that is that give the child an object of the parent's affection. And I always say, no, not a $500 watch or anything. No. It's just something. It's something that the child could hold on to. Right. During school that says, I'm having a hard time. Mom is with me. Yes, you can't see mom, but mom is with me. Dad is with me. The brain is supposed to work nicely, in the ideal situation of having the cerebral cortex to our thinking.
Right.
Being able to have the limbic system the limbic system, amygdala, is responsible for the alarm, but also responsible for our emotions. But when we're anxious, our amygdala is up. Also, what I want to hopefully quickly explain is everybody has heard of the central nervous system, but most folks, in my opinion, do not know that in the autonomic nervous system, besides the central nervous system, is the parasympathetic nervous system. And that's supposed to be, and I say to my clients, it's like, this sounds hippie-ish, but to me, I used to be a body surfer, and so it's like, it's like waves. You don't have a wave coming after wave. You're drowning. And so you're supposed to have a wave that comes into the central nervous system and then the parasympathetic nervous system calming. And so another technique that parents could do, especially with young children, is to get into that routine. This is a calming, quiet time. This is an exciting time. Being able to know when and where to use that time.
Yeah, that makes a big difference. You also talk about the cognitive processing flow chart. Talk to us about that.
It's a flow chart that I created that basically is take your thoughts. Thoughts, as you know, are abstract. So one technique that I came up with was, what if we were to visualize our thoughts as a concrete object? And you could maybe pass this on to your daughter as well.
Right.
For example, I struggle with anxiety. I like wood, so I visualize my thoughts as blocks, and I'm moving them. Oh, I can move it over here. It's out of our head. The thoughts have to have a place to go. If they don't have a place to go, they keep on spinning, which goes to ruminating thoughts.
Right.
So the flowchart is basically just four basic questions. What's the likelihood of this going to happen? If it's something very slim, throw it away. If it's something that you're not willing to throw away, because it's something that you need to do now. If it's not something that you need to do now, assign it a mantra. The mantra I use is, I'll cross that bridge when I get there.
Okay.
Is, or I'll take care of it when the time comes. Next is this the time to work on it? No, it's time to sleep. So okay. I also offer, you know, for even adults to say, talk to yourself as if, and if you're a parent, talk to yourself as you talk to your child, soft, gentle, loving, and say, it's time to sleep. I'll take care of that in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last category is, I do need to address this, okay? Actually play out worst case scenario. What's the likelihood of that happening? Most of the time, individuals will say, it's slow. Other individuals, say, oh, I got to work on this. Okay. But can you play out what the worst case scenario is? Do you have the skills? Going back to the tripod, as soon as you find something to be in control of, even if it's not about that exact thing, the anxiety diminishes.
That makes sense. So when you work with somebody new, I'm assuming you start with their background, their childhood. You go through, do you like help them process their trauma and then teach them tools, or what it's like? Like if I came to see you and I had an anxiety issue.
What is going on, Lisa? And then because a lot of folks think psychology is, they have all kinds of thoughts. I won't get into that, but I try to educate folks and encourage folks that psychology is a science. So a lot of stuff, the first 8 years of life is really, really crucial. And so, you know, what's going on in our adult life is often connected to that, especially if it's anxiety, depression, relationship problems.
Right.
You know, those early years, you could really predict academic success. You could predict relationship success. A lot of things in those early years. So I connected back just for that reason, so that they understand. And something else I want the listener to understand is, well, that's blaming the parent. No, how I explain this, sitting on a bar stool or using drugs, that's blaming the parent. But in therapy, it's not about blame. It's about understanding how your childhood, how certain things that happened to you as a childhood is affecting you to this day. That's the important piece.
Right. That absolutely is. What do you like most about your work, John?
When I see transformation in individuals.
I bet. Are you taking new clients? Because you're very wonderful. Yeah. I was like, okay, we got to talk after the show.
I am taking new clients, yes.
Oh, that's great. Now, do you have a private practice?
Private practice, yeah.
John, was there anything that we didn't touch on today from your book? It's such a great book. I mean, you go into such great detail. Again, making movies in our minds, working through our anxiety. Was there anything you were hoping that we would talk about that we didn't touch on?
One thing, Lisa, is that, you know, as everyone knows, that we've had two major events in the United States contemporary history that has exponentially risen, you know, anxiety. One is, you know, 9/11. But the pandemic, I strongly believe that that has had long-lasting effects. And I would say we have an epidemic in this country of anxiety.
Yes. And people need to deal with it. And they need to find help.
Yes, you could see it in how people drive. You could see it on people don't trust each other. I mean, we are living in a nation with very anxious individuals.
Yeah, we are. And that's why it's so important to read books like yours. Again, making movies in our minds, working through our anxiety. John, I know you don't have a website, but let us know where we can get the book. I'm assuming at any bookseller, local books you can ask, or Amazon, Barnes & Noble online.
Basically, the book is online through Barnes & Noble online, Walmart online, Amazon. There's several places, but I would recommend going to Barnes & Noble online and if the person doesn't mind, you know, make a two-sentence review in there.
Yeah, it's great. I got to do that. It's a really good book.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And then if folks wanted to contact me, you could contact me with email, which is my last name at nutzero.com.
Okay, and I will put that in the show notes. And John, this has been great. I really will be talking with you soon.
Oh, thank you very much.
I've been looking for someone good for my daughter. So everybody, keep coming back to Alf Power 5 days a week. Rate, review, subscribe, and tell your friends. Thanks so much.
Well, that's it for our show today. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you. And we would appreciate it if you could please rate and review and leave a comment, because the more you engage with our podcast, the more you will find it and help other people find it wherever they listen to their podcast. So be sure to follow us. I'm at Andrea Donsky and at Naturally Savvy. And Lisa?
At Lisa Davis, MPH.
Thank you so much. And please share this episode, because the more you share shows you care. We'll see you next time.